everyone. Welcome to Naglers Never Right, the first ever episode. That's right, it's an extension of my picks column during the year. Naglers Never Right. All three of you that read that on a weekly basis know what I'm talking about. Because let's face it, when you have a monster audience like I do, I mean, all of three, four, maybe five people if we're pushing it, you've got to keep the brand awareness going. So Naglers Never Right it is. Here it is in podcast form. What's it going to be? I don't know. It's going to be NFL talk mostly. Lots of Packers talk, obviously. We're here at CheeseheadTV.com, for God's sake. So that'll happen. But it won't just be that. It'll mostly be an outlet for me to download a bunch of thoughts throughout the day, and then I'll kind of put it up on the site towards the end of the afternoon. We'll have guests. We'll talk to people from within the NFL, who cover the NFL, who've played in the NFL, who all sorts of stuff around the NFL. Just people I like. People I like to talk to. People who, you know, something happens and I think, hey, I wonder what that person thinks about it. Just a chance to talk to some cool people. Like today, for the first ever episode, we're going to talk to Matt Bowen, former safety, current NFL analyst, all-around great guy. He's a good friend of mine. Happy to have him on board. We're going to talk a bunch of stuff. Let's kick it off right here, right now, with Matt Bowen. Matthew Bowen, how the hell are you, buddy? Thanks so much for coming on.
I'm doing great. You know, it's Cubs season. Cubs are above 500, I think, for the first time under Theo in a couple of years.
And the Brewers are most definitely not.
They're not, but, you know, I love this time of the year. I do. I love the draft. I love the process. I love all the talk about it. I think it's good for the league. And I like getting into these prospects. Now, obviously, Aaron, you know, I'm not a scout. I'm not going to pretend to be a scout. But I think I know the game enough to where I can look at a kid and say, I think he can play. And I think if you know football, within 5 minutes of watching film, you can tell if a guy can play or not.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it's funny. You talk to some of the old school scouts or even the GMs, somebody like, you know, Ron Wolf. He had the kind of the same philosophy when he was hiring his scouts. He would put a guy in a room with, you know, some film of a prospect and, you know, have him write it up real plain and simple, like, can he play or not? And, you know, Ron would say, oh, that guy is, you know, that guy knows what he's looking at and that guy doesn't. And I love that. I totally agree in that regard. I think, obviously, we both, you know, cover the NFL for a living and, you know, that it does pay the bills when, you know, this empty space between the end of pro days and the beginning of the draft, it's kind of filled with speculation. Obviously, the clicks and what have you, they definitely fill the space. But I tend to agree, yeah, you see a guy, you know if he can play or not. Then it's all about valuation, and that's where the real trick comes in.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That's the meat and potatoes of it. Mm-hmm. That's where these guys make their money. That's why GMs are successful, why they're looking for work in 2-3 years after. hits or misses. And you got to hit in the top of the draft, but you also have to hit at the back end of the draft. As you know, growing up watching the Green Bay Packers, hitting the back end of the draft, hitting on the undrafted free agents, finding guys that fit or mesh with your team. You know, I had an interesting discussion with Greg Gabriel last week. You know, Greg, who's in our business now, but used to be the, you know, was a scout for 25 plus years, former Bears, director of college scouting. And he talked about the private workout process and how different that is, too, from the pro days, from the combine, getting in a room with the guy, putting him up on a chalkboard, saying, okay, I'm going to install 3 or 4 basic concepts. And what he said they used to do is they didn't tell him they were going to take his notes. But afterwards, they collect his notes, see what type of note taker he is. And they put him up on the chalkboard and say, okay, tell me everything I just told you. Draw it up for me. Then they take him on the field. Okay, now you're going to work out. Now you're going to run those plays in the field. If you're a quarterback, if you're a wide receiver, running back, same with the defensive back. We play cover 2. Let's see you get to the deep half, top of the numbers, read the quarterback, break on the football. There's so much that goes into this. But the one thing I'll say, Aaron, is that no one can account for, is how a guy responds. How a guy responds when he gets hit in the mouth by a veteran the first day. Because I'll tell you what, those veterans, guys that play 7, 8, 9, 10 years, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to find that rookie the first day of padded practice, you're going to put him on his ass. You want to see how he responds. Does he get up and hit you back? Right. If he does, hey, you got a player, you got a teammate. You got a guy he can go to battle with. But if he doesn't, that's the first thing they want to see. How can he take being hit? How can he take working with their big boys? Because this is now, this is your livelihood now. You're not in scholarship anymore. It's a tough process. I think every rookie, whether you're a first-round pick or a sixth-round pick, it's an interesting transition. It doesn't happen overnight. I think, Aaron, in our business sometimes, it's unfortunate. We want immediate returns.
Right.
You know, you talk about a guy like Marcus Mariota. I don't think you're going to see an immediate return. Does that mean he's not a good football player? Heck no.
No, exactly.
It doesn't affect.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. And it's funny that I just wrote about this on the site the other day, coming off of something that Phil Savage had put up on the Senior Bowl website in regards to the conversation around prospects. I think if we, you know, as the media, if we talked about guys in a tier system, which teams do anyway,
you know,
that's what teams do. They put these guys in tiers. If we did that, it would slow down the conversation on guys after they're drafted. It would allow for some breathing room and allow guys to, you know, kind of develop before we go, oh, the media or a bunch of people who watch football had this guy pegged as a third rounder and he was taken in the fourth or the fifth or he was over, like he was taken in the second. And then that becomes the conversation rather than, well, we thought initially that he was maybe a borderline starter, but he could definitely develop in our system to do X, Y, and Z. Then you're having a conversation rather than, oh, well, he was overdrafted or underdrafted, depending on which draft analyst you're talking to. And also, this allows, you know, the destruction of the draft grades after the draft, which just destroys my humanity. But yeah, that I couldn't agree more with that assessment.
And I think a perfect example. Okay, I was down at the Senior Bowl. And my favorite thing about the Senior Bowl, Aaron, is I go down there. You know, it's right off the NFL season, which you said you and I cover.
Yeah.
I'm not well-versed in these kids yet. Obviously, I know the top players, like everyone else. You watch college football on Saturday, you can see that Jameis Winston can throw the football. We all understand that. I'm talking about the guys you haven't watched. And there's a strong safety down there named Jaquiski Tartt from Samford University. So now you're talking a lower-level school. Guy that didn't play in a lot of primetime football games. Guy that's not well-known to the average college football fan. And this guy's like a missile on the field. He's breaking downhill. He's dropping his head gear. He's 6 feet tall, maybe 6'1", 220-plus pounds, and he's playing strong safety. I look at this guy and say, you know what? That's a football player. That's a football player. Is he a first-rounder? Probably not. And like you said, those tiers. He's probably in that second tier somewhere in a weak safety class, and he's not going to start on day one. You put him out here as a starter, you're going to ruin his career.
Right.
Okay, can he play in some packages? Sure. If you have a creative defensive coordinator, you get him on the field in third down as a sub linebacker, as a big safety in terms of a big nickel package when you have three safeties in the field, sure. But his main role is going to be on special teams. He's going to knock the hell out of people on special teams. That's going to be his value. But what that does as a rookie, that gives you time. That buys you 2 to 3 years in the NFL to develop. And nothing develops players more, especially defensive guys, linebackers, defensive backs, then playing special teams. You learn how to use your hands. You learn how to defeat blocks. You learn how to tackle in space. You learn how to create angles to the football. That all translates to the football field when you're a defensive starter. That all translates. And that's part of the learning process. It's part of earning your stripes in the NFL. But you mention a guy like that sometimes in our business, it doesn't create a lot of hype, Aaron, because we're not talking about a first round.
Exactly.
But this is a football player that if you're a defensive back coach, if you're a coordinator, if you're a high-level scout, you look at him and say, you know what? That return is going to be 2 to 3 years down the road. We might have a starter. We might have a guy that's a core special teams player in his first couple years in the NFL that has a huge impact on Sundays. That's a guy we can build with. That's a guy. That's how we want to build our football team. I love players like that.
Absolutely. You and I, we both kind of gravitate to the same kind of guy. I know that from the years we've talked football.
But, right.
Speaking of, you know, letting a guy sit, something caught my eye this week that I wanted to ask you about in regards to, or actually it was a couple days ago, I read that, you know, the Bears had met with Marcus Mariota. Now, obviously, you know, Mariota's meeting with everybody. I mean, especially in the top 10. Everybody who's anybody is kind of, you know, poking around on this kid, and for good reason. I think he can play. I would be very interested to see him go to Chicago and sit behind Cutler. And I know a lot of people think, well, they draft him and they got to get rid of Cutler. I don't think that's the case. I know Cutler's, you know, contract is so prohibitive, it makes it kind of impossible to, you know, move him anywhere. So, you know, obviously, does that help you immediately? If you're Chicago, no, but you've got a new regime there. that that can basically get, quote unquote, their guy and let him sit for a year or two, which is what I think ultimately Mariota really needs to do.
Yeah. I agree with you, Aaron. And this goes against my belief, too, because you and I have talked before. I think the best thing for quarterbacks is to be thrown into the fire. Now, some people disagree with that, but I don't think you improve on the scout team. The scout team is where you get lazy. It's not – the film's not graded. They tell you to throw interceptions as a quarterback, make the defense look good.
Right.
Friday afternoon, Aaron, scout team quarterback's going to throw 15 picks.
Yep.
Okay, because, you know, this goes back when I was playing in Green Bay with Coach Slow. We would see the cards before we go out in the field. Okay, so we would make every play on Friday. Okay, we have guys just sitting there waiting for the ball. Hey, throw it to me. I'm wide open. But in terms of Mariota, yeah, I don't think he's ready to play football yet. I don't. That's not a knock on him, Aaron.
No, I don't think it is either. No.
He's a tremendous athlete. The scouts I talked to, they love this guy. They use the term football makeup. And what that means to me, it's similar to football character. This guy is someone you can believe in, someone you can trust, someone's going to put the work in, someone that's going to improve when he's given the time to improve. We always use that term development or the term learning curve. That's what he needs. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with it. But if you throw him into the fire this year, I have a bad feeling that that's going to force him to take a step backwards. And that's never what you want as a rookie. Do you want to make mistakes? Yes, because you only learn by making mistakes. That's how you get better. Watch yourself on film. Well, there's your footwork, your release point, your vision down the field, your progression, whatever it is that led to that negative on that play. You can learn from that and correct it. But I also believe that this is a guy that needs to sit. This is a guy that needs to learn the system. And you bring up Chicago, and I don't think it's like the Cubs with Theo. You know, that's it seems like it's been a 10-year rebuild here in Chicago, but you're finally seeing some returns in the field this spring. But in the NFL, it's not really a rebuild, but when you, like you said, you have Coach Fox, you have a new general manager, you have an entire new coaching staff. They've already made a bunch of moves in free agency this year. They're going to rebuild that football team for one reason. That's to compete with your guys, with the Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. That's the goal in Chicago. Try to compete and beat Green Bay. But to do that, it's not going to happen overnight. There's a lot of pieces to this puzzle that need to be put into place. Maybe Mariota is one of them. Because I agree with you. Jay Cutler, in my opinion, this is a tryout year for him. And that's a hard thing to say when you're talking about the amount of money he's going to make this year. But that's really what it is. He's got another new coaching staff that he has to prove himself to. And after this year, they can get out of some of that money in the contract. I do believe he'll be there this year. But if you draft Mariota, then you have the future set up.
Yep.
But I'll tell you right now, Aaron, Bears fans would probably see that as a negative because you pass on an edge rusher. You pass on a Kevin White or an Amari Cooper at number 7 to draft a future quarterback. But you have to think about the future always. I've always said this about football. You have to think about the next step. It's always not today. It's what's the next step down the line. Because if you want to be like Green Bay, you need a quarterback. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, and we've, you know, at this point, we know exactly what Cutler is. He is the ultimate coach killer. He is an ultimate tease. And he's going to make some wild plays. There's no doubt about it. But he's also going to kill you. I mean, that is just, down, you know, year in and year out. There are no more questions in that regard. And I think, yeah, you do get Mariota if you can and you sit him. It's interesting. You talk about you know, what happens if Mariota has to play right away. And I think that is the case if he goes 1 or 2, which is most likely. And it's funny. I think he has if he goes 1, I think he's got a much better chance in Tampa Bay than he does in Tennessee. Because I think he has a few weapons in Tampa Bay. No, the offensive line isn't great, but he's got the athleticism to get him out of some trouble maybe, you know, to get on the perimeter and make plays, target some of those bigger receivers that they have. He goes to Tennessee. I shudder to think what happens there. And it's funny that could be the difference in this guy's career. If he goes first, he's got a shot. If he goes second, I think he's dead.
I can agree with that. I agree with that. And that goes back to opportunity. That's something I really believe in the NFL when you're drafted. Where are you drafted? What type of players do you have around you? What type of football culture do you have around you?
Right.
Do you have a culture with veterans that are winners, guys that work hard, guys that set example for young players, a coach that's been a winner before? And I have the utmost respect for Lovie Smith. You and I have talked about it before. You know, I played for Lovie way back. This is a long time now. I agree.
Man Bowen's going to regale us with stories of Lovie Smith back in the day.
I'm almost 40 years old. I can't believe it, but you know, I played for Lovie in 2001 in St. Louis, and obviously I've covered him here when he was the head coach of the Chicago Bears. You know, I just can't see Lovie's defense having that a struggle again like they did last year. I think that defense will be.
They improved as the year went on. I mean, the last month of the season, they were playing much better than the car wreck that they were the first half of the year.
And that can happen with a new coach, whether it's a style of football you play, whether it's a terminology, whether it's a simple techniques. Because Lovie's defense isn't complicated. It's not. It's all predicated on vision, on discipline, and on technique. But it takes a while to master that stuff when you haven't practiced it, when you haven't done it for 5 years, when you're thrown into a new system. But I agree on Mario, because opportunity, what type of culture you're put in terms of the team, in terms of the locker room, in terms of the coaching staff. Is it a winning culture? Is it a team that has struggled for a long time that's trying to build a new culture? You have to have the right guys around you to support rookies, because like I said at the top of this, this is an amazingly tough transition for a lot of guys. And if you're put in the right opportunity, you can really take off.
What do you think about a recently retired player? We're going to go from the guys who are just cutting their teeth and getting into the league to a guy who's just getting out of the league. What do you think about all of the hullabaloo, if you will, around Troy Polamalu? Now, you know, it just dropped the other day that he's retiring.
Right.
Instantly, of course, the NFL media, we have to anoint whether he's a Hall of Famer or not. Mm-hmm. And I think he is, all right? I know this has gotten kind of blown out of proportion on Twitter, because I offhandedly in one tweet said, we're all acting like Leroy Butler isn't sitting there, deservingly so.
Right, you know, I agree on
deserving
that.
To be in and have not even getting a call in recent years. Obviously, there's a whole slew of guys at the safety position who, you know, haven't sniffed being a finalist, let alone being debated in the room. So I'd be interested in your thoughts as a former safety. Do you think he's a first ballot, or is he going to have to wait?
In my opinion, he's a first ballot, but also in my opinion, so is Leroy Butler. So will Ed Reed be. Okay, that's another name that will be brought up, because Ed Reed changed the game. He was an impact player. And, you know, Leroy Butler, it's interesting. The reason I went to Green Bay back in the day is because Leroy got hurt. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's how I got my opportunity. I remember walking and meeting the guy and shaking his hand saying, I can't believe I'm standing next to Leroy Butler. I mean, I couldn't believe that was a guy I looked up to as a, you know, as a college player. Okay, that's someone I looked at and said, man, I would love to be like him. Right. And I think a lot of people thought that about Troy Polamalu. I'll tell you this, Aaron. When I was playing in Washington under Greg Williams, we watched a ton of Steelers tape, okay? Because they were kind of – they kind of set the bar at that stage. You know, you're talking 2004, 5, 6. Everyone wanted to play defense like them. Everyone wanted to steal their blitzes. That's what we did. We stole their blitzes. Everyone did. Okay, everyone wanted to run that stuff. But we couldn't run them like them because they had Troy, okay? I remember watching this play in the defensive meeting room, and we're sitting there, and everyone got quiet because they were showing cover three, and cover three is three deep, four underneath. And Troy Polamalu played cover two from 3 yards off the line of scrimmage. And what he did is he turned his back and ran to the hip of the wide receiver. If the wide receiver ran a square end, he would roll with him. If the wide receiver ran a seven route, which is a corner route, he'd cut underneath the hip. The wide receiver ran downfield, he just kept going, and he'd play the ball in the pocket, turn his head at the proper time, and knock the play down or pick it off. I've never seen anyone do that. Never. Now, Sean Taylor was a guy that could do that, but in terms of the way Troy played, it was so unique. It was so rare that no one could copy him, Aaron. You couldn't copy him. He can get away with stuff because he was so athletic and because his instincts were off the charts. This is a guy that understood where the ball was going. Now, it got him in trouble sometimes, too.
Let's be honest. Yeah,
it did.
Yeah.
But you weigh the risk versus the reward with a player like that. You say, look, he might give up two plays because he's sitting on a route and they beat him over the top.
But they get him for a first down. They get him for a 15-yard gain. But then he causes a turnover on the next play, and that's all wiped out. I agree there.
That reward there were massive impact plays.
Yeah.
Did he change the game? Yeah, he played it differently. Let's put it that. He played it differently. No one is – like I said, I don't remember ever seeing someone play cover two from 3 yards off the line of scrimmage because you weren't talented enough.
Right.
You weren't talented enough. You couldn't slow your heart rate down. Okay, you get a guy like me doing that, my heart is going to be beating out of my chest. What does that mean as a defensive back? That equals panic. What does panic equal? Grabbing, pulling 15 yards down the field, 20 yards down the field. That's an automatic first down. Because they're going to throw the flag every time. Troy never panicked. He never had that sense of panic, so he could play the ball from any position. He had incredible body control, incredible ball skills, incredible hitter. Okay, he was a massive hitter that wide receivers were afraid of. And that's part of being safe, playing the safety position. You want people to be scared of you. You want people to be timid when they catch the ball and go into a shell because they don't want you to drop your shoulder pads and your headgear on. That's how he changed the game. And in terms of what he did, winning Super Bowl titles, making the Pro Bowls. And I know the Pro Bowls, we all know, Aaron, that they're not.
No, but he got votes. He was Defensive Player of the Year, and he got votes right. A couple votes the year he didn't win it. I mean, the guy was right. he's an amazing player. There's no doubt about it. I found it interesting. I was looking at his stats just when I was getting in these Twitter arguments with people about Leroy Butler. He didn't really have a ton of sacks. Like, he created havoc in the backfield. He did that, you know, we all loved when he would time his jump over the line or – come blitzing to the backfield. He did not sack the quarterback a whole lot, which I found surprising. I think he caused more havoc than actually, you know, sacking the QB. But, you know, disruption is production, and he definitely disrupted things.
He did. If you're playing in the NFL, a lot of coaches have what's called a production chart, and it's based on ball disruptions. It's interceptions, forced fumbles, tackles for loss, sacks. And we just call one of them just a disruption. If you force a quarterback to throw the ball away, that's a disruption. That goes on the production chart. If you force quarterback to come off his read, that's a disruption, and to check it down. So all those things added together, an extremely productive player that kind of altered the way the game was played. But in the same regard, to alter the game, but no one could copy it. That's why he was so unique. That's why he was so rare. So a roundabout way to answer your question, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. So is Leroy Butler, and eventually so Ed Reed should be as well, because they all impacted the game.
Absolutely. Speaking of impacting the game, impacting your offseason, I see you made a little sojourn back to Iowa recently. How was that? How's Coach doing?
It was great. You know, I'll say this. Iowa's a magical place to me. It always will be. I feel better when I cross the Mississippi River.
Right.
And seeing all that corn, the farms, and then getting into Iowa City, which I think is a beautiful place. And, you know, Iowa's got a new football facility now. It was brand new when I was a freshman in 95. And, you know, back then, that was one of the best around. But, you know, 20 years later, they needed to make changes. And it is absolutely gorgeous. The indoor facility, the weight room, the meeting room, the training room, everything about it is so first class. If I'm a recruit, I'd be drooling when I walked into this place. It was great to see Coach Ferentz. Coach Doyle, who is my strength coach, again, has been there for 16 years. LeVar Woods is now the tight end coach. He was coaching linebackers in the past. You know, LeVar and I played together at Iowa, stood up in each other's weddings. To me, it's a magical place. And I don't say that about many places. There's three magical places. And it's Glenbard West High School. And I'm talking about the atmosphere playing there. It's Glenbard West High School where I went. It's Iowa City and it's Lambeau Field. Okay, those are magical places to me. Those are places when you walk into, you feel the history, you feel better about yourself. You're excited to be there. You can't wait to get on those fields. I remember when I was in Green Bay, it's before they redid Lambeau, Aaron, and there used to be steps, concrete steps that would walk down to the stadium. And they were old, they were cracked. But you start thinking about the guys that played there. You start thinking about Paul Horning, you know, Reggie White. You know, they walk down these same steps. And some guys don't get into that, all right? Some guys don't care about the history of the league. To me, it was very important. To me, the history of Iowa with Hayden Fry and now Kirk Ferentz, the amount of NFL players, the amount of Rose Bowl team, BCS teams that played there, that's important to me. And the reason I went out there was I'm doing a story on Brandon Sheriff, the first round left tackle, or some people say offensive guard. And I'll tell you something about Brandon. This guy, he hunts and he fishes, and he plays football. That's what he does. He mauls people on the football field, and he hunts and he fishes.
Our kind of guy.
He's like a mountain man, okay? Great to talk to him. I can't wait to see where he's drafted. I think if he gets in the right situation, this is a guy that's going to play 8 to 10 years, whether it's that offensive guard, whether it's that left tackle, whether it's that right tackle. You know, talking to Brian Ferentz, I said, where does he play? He said, what do you need? If you need a left tackle, he'll play there. If you need a left guard, right guard, he'll play there. If you need a right tackle, he'll play there. He'll do whatever you ask because – he's kind of – I mean, he's a super freak. He is. He's 6'5", 320. He cleans 440 pounds. He squats 620 pounds. He ran a 707 three-cone at 320. I ran a 706 three-cone at 202 pounds. Okay? So this guy's a rare athlete. I'm excited for him. But just to go back there and be back on campus, that's special to me. And I've always said this about Iowa. You know, Aaron, we've had two coaches in the last 36 years. Two. That's Hayden Fry and Kirk. Yeah, well, we don't win as many games as Alabama. Okay. We don't. That's just the reality of the situation. But there's a thing I've always said. It's the Iowa culture. It's the Iowa way. These guys stick together. You can find a guy from the 1981 team, and I can go up and talk football with him for hours and hours and hours because you all have the same type of thinking, the same type of football mentality. Right. That's why it's special to me.
Looking at the other side of the line, you're talking about O-line. What about this Carl Davis kid? You know, I throw on the tape, and I see a lot of stuff I really like.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see him kind of disappear.
Right, right.
On occasion. Is that – I mean, what's your take there? I mean, because I've talked to a few people that I trust who have looked at it, and they think the sky's the limit for the kid if he can
right.
come to work down in and down out. But there, that seems to be no guarantee.
Right. I think he's a day two guy. Okay, and day two. I think, okay, what are we talking about again? He's a second-tier guy.
Right.
Okay, he's a second-tier guy. He might have a first-tier skill set. He might, because you watched him at the Senior Bowl. He dominated all week.
That's why I saw him at the Senior Bowl, and I thought, who is this guy? You know, that's what kind of started it.
He whipped people. He was violent with his hands. He was powerful. He played three technique. He could play five. He played nose at the Senior Bowl. Wherever they asked him to play, he played. He was practice player of the week. People said, well, that's a big deal down there.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. You're talking about the top seniors in the country. Obviously, not every top senior is there, but 90% of the top seniors in the country are down there. He did very well for himself. He made some money that week. But you put on the tape, there are some inconsistencies. There are times where he flashes. You say, that's a first-round player. Other times you watch him, you say, that's a day-two player, which means a second-rounder or a third-rounder. I think he's somewhere in that day-two mix. Mm-hmm. I think he still has room to grow. You know, it was interesting. Talking with Coach Ferentz the other day, Sheriff and Carl Davis are the only players in the past 16 years at Iowa to report at over 300 pounds. The only two.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? The only two. And Sheriff dropped 24 pounds. They got him down to 300 and built him back up. Carl Davis, same way. They dropped him down, built him back up. You know, because Iowa is more of a developmental place. They'll take tight ends and move them to left tackle.
Right.
You know, they're developing the strength and conditioning program. But, you know, I think Carl Davis, like you said, has amazing ability. But he's got to be more consistent. And he's going to, you know, a lot of rookies, they learn the hard way because you're not on scholarship anymore. You can't be inconsistent in the NFL and play. You can't. They'll take you off the field immediately. But what I think the best thing would be for him is to be in a, you know, a defensive line room with a lot of leaders, a lot of veterans, a lot of guys he can emulate in terms of how they get treatment, how they prepare, how they stretch and do their flexibility, and how they practice. He needs to be in a good defensive line room, part of that rotation, okay? And we all know with defensive linemen, you're going to play. If you're in uniform, you're going to play. It might not be 80 snaps. It might only be 25 to 30. But you're going to play if you're in uniform. But if he's in that right type of room, I think he can really take off, and that arrow will be pointing up on him. But he's got to be more consistent because I agree with you. The tape, there's flashes, and then there's periods where he doesn't produce. So you have to have some questions there.
I'm talking to Matt Bowen here on Nagler's Never Right. Matt, thanks a lot for jumping on the first ever episode of the podcast. Real quickly, before I let you go, I read this morning that Victor Cruz and Odell Beckham Jr. are planning a joint celebration. Now, I have been on a years-long crusade for the NFL to abolish the group celebration penalty. I hope these guys go through with it. But as I'm thinking of that, and I knew I was going to talk to you, I wanted to get your take as a former defensive player. Obviously, one of the reasons they kind of did away with group celebrations was because of the reactions that we saw on the field to things like the Fun Bunch in Washington. You know, famously, Dallas players came over and tried to break it up, etc. What was your reaction as a player when guys, you know, kind of did the deed after they scored a touchdown? I mean, does that bug you, or is that just kind of, you know, part of the game and you just shrug it off?
No, I mean, it didn't bug me because I'll say this. You know, if you get beat, you get beat. Okay. If someone wants to show you up, hey, they're entitled to it. They throw it over the top of your head as a defensive back. They should show you up. Okay. Okay. Because you know, as a defensive back, it's this empty feeling in your stomach when you're beat. It's the worst feeling in the world. And your heart sinks and you know, hey, it's time to strike up the band and play the fight song because you just got beat for 6 points. Okay. Right. In my rookie year, I was in St. Louis. Marshall, Isaac, Torrey, the Bob and Weave. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Bob Weave was big for us. It was big for us. That was a big thing for our football team when they broke out the Bob Weave after a big touchdown, because that kind of brought a lot of energy to the football team. We mentioned the Fun Bunch with old Coach Gibbs teams in Washington. I think that stuff should be allowed. And I have kind of an old school thinking. You know, from a defensive perspective, I strongly agree. If someone takes out one of your guys, you know, you take out one of your guys. There's nothing wrong with that. That's football. It's a physical football game. You do it cleanly. You do it violently. We do it within the rules. You can allow that to happen. If you want to showboat, you want to talk trash, that's fine. If you can back it up, Aaron, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I think the game makes the game better. Now, remember, I played with Freddie Smoot. Freddie Smoot talked to anyone I've ever seen in my life. And I love Freddie, one of my favorites ever. Yeah. You can hear Freddie when he's in a press position screaming, talking. All the time. I love that stuff. I love that stuff because I truly believe if you are out there talking, then you're making plays. Then your defense is making plays. Then you're playing fast. You're playing with energy. I love that stuff because there's nothing better than whipping someone's ass. Okay, there's nothing better than that on Sundays. Trust me, there is nothing. When you get that feeling that you're hitting on everything, everything's working for you. You're seeing everything. You're playing fast. You're taking the proper footwork. You're flying to the football like a missile shot out of a cannon, okay? That's great. That's great stuff. And if you want to talk with it, go ahead. And if you don't like it, then shut them up, Aaron.
Yeah,
if you don't like
exactly.
it, shut him, then hit them in the mouth and shut them up. Because if you can't, hey, then this game's not for you.
I just think, you know, guys work so freaking hard. It's like when people get upset about sack dances. Do you know how hard it is to sack a quarterback in the NFL these days? I mean, they should be able to do a freaking salsa dance down the line all they want if they get to the quarterback. And, you know, as far as the group celebrations go, what is wrong with showing a little joy, a little emotion with your teammates? You look at the World Cup last year. Those guys score, and they're going bananas, and it's so much fun to watch. But the NFL can't have that for whatever reason. It just it just drives me nuts.
I agree, and I think the same thing. You run down the field in special teams, you make a tackle inside of the 20, let everyone know about it.
Yeah.
You know how hard it is to get down there?
It's hard, exactly. It's like people, I think, just take it all for granted. I mean, they see it. I think, you know, fantasy football has kind of, you know, desensitized people. Madden has desensitized people to just how damn hard it is to do what these guys do on the football field. I just, you know, and if you make it happen, man, go to town. That's my take.
And it should bring out your personalities.
Yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
Because the best defenses, best offenses have unique, different personalities.
And if your personality is flip the ball to the ref and walk back to your sideline, then that's great.
Right.
That's what Barry Sanders did, and he was one of the best of all time. Nothing wrong with that.
No, I agree. I agree 100%.
All right, I'm just being old and cantankerous here.
No, so am I. You know, that's all right.
Bowen, you're the best. Thanks a lot for hopping on here, the maiden voyage, if you will. We'll definitely have to do this again real soon.
All right, buddy. Go Cubs, all right?
Yeah. Easy with that. Talk to you later, buddy.
All right, thank you.
All right, well, that'll do it for the first ever Naglers Never Right. Thanks so much to Matt for joining me and for everyone, all two of you, for downloading this, listening to it on the site, etc. It'll be available on cheeseheadtv.com. It'll hopefully be in our iTunes podcast queue as well. So subscribe on iTunes. You can just type in Cheesehead TV and you'll find us, Packers Fan Podcast. More to come. Hopefully we'll be doing this few times every week. Look forward to doing more great guests, more great chat. Talk to you all soon. Thanks so much for checking it out. Go Pack Go.